and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Bjork.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to the Hot Takes episode, the season prediction episode you've all been waiting for. We're 8 days away. We're finally in the single digits, of which, by the way, Luke, did you see that video that I posted on the Twitter machine of that cowboy?
Yeah, how do you find this stuff?
Well, it's the new meme thing that's been going around is, you know, so that clip is from a music video that's like 2 years old.
Okay.
And has just absolutely blown up in the last month or so. And so I actually saw Parker Hagman, one of the best Twins followers, Twins Twitter guys out there.
He's a blogger.
He's one of me. He's one of me.
Yeah.
And I saw him use that and I clicked on it and I was like, oh my God, what is this? Found the original video. And then I was just like, this is such a mood. Such a mood as we're now single digit days away. But I just thought I wanted to give, you know, that is such a just a classic video. I love the internet, man. The internet's such a good place if you don't go looking in the dark cracks and corners of it.
I consider myself like fairly internet savvy, you know, being a millennial, etc. But well, I did not know where that was from, so I appreciate the education. I'll look it up and
yeah, all I did was just like Google crazy cowboy singing.
Sure.
I also just want to know, like, when they approached that guy, were they like, hey, we want you to be in our music video, you're gonna do great, and he's like, all right, yeah, let's do it. What am I gonna be doing? Well, we kind of just want to put you on a green screen that's going to be set behind the mountains, and you're just going to be like yodeling. Like, you cool with that?
Yeah.
He's like, I mean, I guess no one's ever going to see this. My grandkids will never see it. Well, didn't he know that that was going to get just a bit bigger?
Yeah, that's funny. Okay, let's get to actually talking some real football instead of moods, especially internet moods. This is probably, the episode that I get the most flack for, because we're going to talk about 12 football games in the future, all of which a million things are going to change. Who knows what is going to change from now until then. And somehow I'm going to take, and you know, I'm not MV of DT, and I'm not running my own simulations in, you know, out on for all these games. And I don't understand all the advanced analytics. I like the advanced analytics. I don't understand it, but I'm somehow supposed to put a narrative behind why I'm justifying that I'm going to pick the Gophers to beat South Dakota State or lose to South Dakota State. So in advance, I apologize. I've gotten a lot of hate in previous years for this episode. Justified.
Yeah, so
fairly
folks have
justified.
Thrown me some shade over the years. And you know what you did, Luke? You changed your best. Now we're in 2019. The year of our Lord, and you are ready to deliver for the folks, because I think, contrary to popular belief and to public perception around college football, I think our win totals, I mean, you'd be shocked to know that a Gopher football podcast is going to be optimistic about them. But that being said, you guys know me. I try to be as grounded as I can be. I'm going to give you my rationale. I'm not just going to say 10-2, Big Ten West, book your tickets right now for Indianapolis. Well, I'm not predicting 10 wins. At least I'm not yet. I haven't drank that much Kool-Aid yet tonight, but it's going to be an interesting one. I'm going to be very curious to see where you go, because Luke and I have not compared notes prior to this. So I think he has a general idea of where I'm going to go with this, but Luke, I'm very, very interested to see what your reasonings are for what this 2019 schedule is going to be hold.
You know, and I did have the opportunity to basically read your cheat sheet, because I do read Gopher Illustrated, so I know exactly what you're thinking, and I might take some of your hot takes because I'm going to try to go first a lot. But
oh wow, look at you know how to do it.
No,
steal
I'm
the
good.
Thunder.
Yeah, just,
of which, by the way, where did you find all this stuff?
Yeah, at GopherIllustrated.com.
Do you know how much it is to join?
I think it's somewhere around $1. I think literally and figuratively is a thing you like to say a lot. So
you're finally getting the bits.
I do get the bit. And additionally, I got some interesting hot news from the Gopher, the Goal Line Club tailgate. Did you hear that Tony's Diner is going to be catering it this year?
Shut up.
No, I'm dead serious. I got
it. How many times from me going to the U and living very close to the
Oh, I know.
like Saturday and Sunday mornings when you're like, I need to get something in my belly, we'd go to Tony's.
Hold on. I'm just going to pull up the text real quick just to verify that I'm not spouting something.
I can also tell you. Oh, no,
that definitely says Tony's Diner is going to cater this year.
Oh, well, that's elite.
So if you're interested in going, check out the Goal Line Club's website, obviously. But number two, opener five will get you save you $5. Rumor has it a bunch of people.
I was about to say I remember you texted me that the Goal Line Club was like, "Yo, we actually had people use the promo code." So for those of you who are listening and used it, mm-hmm. God bless you, mm-hmm. and we'll see you there next Thursday night.
Yeah, absolutely. So check that out.
Luke will be the 6'2", orange-haired, skinny-looking guy. I'll be the 6'4", really poor beard, looks like he has a face for radio guy. And I think we'll be pretty easy to spot if you want to come up and chat.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's get into this. I know we talked a little bit about ESPN's Power Football Index. Did you know, I think we maybe talked about this on the podcast. I know we texted about this. But the Gophers are technically favored in 10 of their 12 games this season.
According to ESPN, in like early to mid-July. Yeah, yes.
But even as it sits now, like I just pulled it up. I don't know how often they update this. Like, this is the thing that frustrates me about some of these advanced analytics sites, when they don't put like last updated. Now, I know that certain people have frustrations with the S&P, and it's fair. Some of them are very fair, but at least
Wisconsin would be the biggest discrepancy between S&P and that ESPN article, wouldn't it be?
Well, the S&P in large part, it gets some hate basically because people try to use it as a forward looking tool, where my understanding is that it actually has no basis for that whatsoever. I actually learned that listening to a different podcast, which is the TWA pod. They do a nice job. Shout out to Mr. MV of DT. He does a really good job. He actually joined us one time. That was really fun.
I remember that.
Yeah. But all that said, it frustrates me because the Power Football Index right now doesn't state the last time it was updated. So I don't know when this was last updated. We could say it's probably July.
I would imagine it hasn't accounted for injuries or anything like that. But I think for the large part, 8 days away from at least Minnesota kicking off,
yeah,
I don't think there's been too many injuries around the Big Ten. So I would imagine that ESPN would stand on their advanced analytics there with their FPI. And I also will say, if folks want to go back and listen to this specific episode for last year, do you remember what I predicted, Luke?
Oh, I know you were dead on because the Gophers ended up 6-6. I don't think you had the games right.
I didn't get the right six games, but right. I did get 6-6. So maybe maybe I'm not crazy. Maybe those Hank Ekpay and Mitch Leitner takes are out of the system finally.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So maybe as we sit here now. Power Football Index, they are favored in all but two games. The two games that they're not favored in would be against Penn State and Iowa, the two of the four teams that are currently ranked in the top 25. Those four mm-hmm. teams that are ranked in the top 25 in order from lowest ranking to highest ranking are Nebraska, who they will play in the second weekend in October. Then you have Iowa at number 20. Wisconsin at 19 and Penn State at 15. Here's one thing that I find very interesting. I've read a lot of people that are very optimistic on Wisconsin, but they're only ranked 19th this year versus last year. I think they came in ranked number fourth overall.
Well, they were supposed to run the table.
No, I know. And they were supposed to be a
Big Ten team.
They were supposed to be the powerful, they were supposed to be a playoff team, right?
Yeah.
Like, and people are technically higher on them now, which is, I think, kind of interesting.
And we'll get into it a little bit as we go game by game here. And we talked about it a ton last week, or it felt like at least this month, we talked a ton about schedule and how Minnesota for the first time avoids the powerhouse East teams, Michigan, the Michigan States, and the Ohio States. Well, Wisconsin has all three of those teams, Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State. And Minnesota has Penn State, Rutgers, and Maryland. And so for the most part, after that, everybody kind of plays the same schedule with, depending on who gets the home and away game. But I mean, if there was ever a year, and that's what I continue to tell people, if there was ever a year I think this one is probably going to be the one. So,
we'll see. I have one question for you. This is just an observation looking at the schedule. I noted that the Gophers play three West teams, then they play three East teams, then they play three West teams. Is that literally just a coincidence, or is that kind of how they set it up that you do your crossover games in the middle?
I honestly didn't notice. Do they really play? Yeah, they play Rutgers, Maryland, and Penn State.
Yeah, they play all their East teams in the middle. When I was doing a little research,
Think about that. They go three non-conference, three West, three East, three West. That's wild.
I thought it was just odd.
Look at you.
my assumption is it's just a coincidence, right?
I think so. I would imagine so. Yeah, I think when Minnesota plays Nebraska, Nebraska is going to be coming off two games against Ohio State and Northwestern. So I don't think Nebraska starts with three East teams, but I could be wrong. I just think it's a schedule anomaly, but that's an astute job, Mr. Buehr.
Thank you. I did a tiny bit of homework. Okay, let's get into this. We'll go game by game, starting with a game coming up a week from today. A week from tomorrow, we're recording on a Wednesday evening. So this is against South Dakota State, an FCS team that was very, very strong last year. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they beat NDSU, the eventual national champion, in the regular season, lost in the playoff, or didn't run into them in the playoff.
That was in 17 when they beat NDSU, and then NDSU beat them twice last year.
Okay.
Once in the regular season, then once for the title.
Okay. But their high-end quarterback, he is now graduated, so they're breaking in a new quarterback this year. So I guess looking at this game, FCS team, Big Ten team, most would argue that this should be a blowout. I think the line is currently at 12.5. I think some people are maybe a little surprised by how close that line is. Does it surprise you?
It does, and for one big aspect, and you mentioned it, is Taron Christian's no longer there. Taron Christian was the engine that drove that South Dakota State offense. Now, I'm sure we have some listeners that have watched far more South Dakota State Jackrabbit games than I have in the last 2-3 years, but from my time doing a little bit of stuff up in Fargo with the Bison, from just doing some background research and knowing how that South Dakota State offense was humming, I mean, they did have Dallas Goedert, who's now with the Philadelphia Eagles. He's no longer there. They did have Taron Christian, who essentially did everything for them at quarterback, especially last year after they lost their two big playmakers to the NFL. And so what's going to happen at quarterback is a big unknown, where they're going to be replacing Taron Christian with a kid by the name of Jabor Gibbs, who's going to be a redshirt freshman. And Jabor Gibbs hasn't played a single collegiate snap yet. And so Minnesota's really got no tape to go off of. They don't really know what to expect from the offense. But what I will say is South Dakota State is ranked number 4 in the FCS. And the big reason that they are is, outside of quarterback, they have a lot of things coming back. They have Pierre Strong, who's their running back, had 1,000-plus yards, double-digit rushing scores. Wide receiver Cade Johnson had 17 receiving touchdowns with 1,300 passing or receiving yards last year. And they also have a big linebacker by the name of Christian Roseboom, who is also potentially going to get some NFL eyes here in his senior season. So outside of the quarterback, they're probably going to be pretty good, especially at the FCS level. Now, that being said, how good is the question? And that question I can't really answer, because I have no idea what to expect from their quarterback, Jabor Gibbs. Now, if I was a betting man, of which I think everyone listening to this podcast, including Luke, knows, I'm a very big betting man at various stages of my life here. And I would imagine that if you're South Dakota State and you're trying to break in this brand new quarterback, you're going to be on the road in the Big Ten in an atmosphere I would imagine is going to be pretty rowdy on a Thursday night at 8 p.m. And I would imagine they're just going to try to take the air out of the ball, because you have Pierre Strong. You have, I believe, 3 returning starters on your offensive line. So they're probably going to try to do the same thing Minnesota is. And that's just, really run the ball, because that's where Minnesota's strengths are still on the offense. Is they have really good running backs. They have a pretty good run blocking offensive line. And so they're going to try to beat you up front. And so that's where I think this game comes down to, Luke, is maybe it's a game through a quarter, two quarters, maybe, but where Minnesota should win this game easily, to me, is in the trenches. You look across Minnesota's offensive line: Sam Schluter, Blaze Andrews, Connor Olson, Curtis Dunlap, Daniel Falele. And each one of them is over 3 bills. They're each athletic. They're each one of them, to me, are pretty good run blockers, and you're going to be going against an FCS defensive line that isn't exactly Wisconsin, and it isn't exactly Iowa. You're going to be going against guys that were undersized, probably not the biggest, the longest, or the heaviest guys in the world, and that's the reason that they're at, that they are at the FCS level. And so if I'm Minnesota, I'm trying to make sure offensively I can run the ball, sets up my play action to Rashad Bateman deep, Tyler Johnson in the short to intermediate. And then if you're Minnesota's defense, I mean, if I was Joe Rossi, I would sell out to stop the run and say, Jabor Gibbs, I want you to beat me through the air in your first collegiate game on the road in a Big Ten school. So I have Minnesota beating the Jackrabbits. I think it's going to be closer than people think. Now it is a 12-point line, which I think Minnesota's going to do well with that in terms of I have Minnesota 35, South Dakota State 17. And so, I don't understand the 12-point line unless Jabor Gibbs is coming out setting the world on fire. But what say you, Luke?
Yeah, you know, looking at this, I think I would agree with you that when you see an FCS school play against a BCS school, or what is it? Is the BCS even legit still? Power 5? Whatever.
I would just go FCS versus FBS.
FBS,
Power
yeah.
5, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, whatever it is. Your observation is very astute in that where the FBS teams really have an advantage is at the offense and defensive line, just with, one, the athleticism and the size in general. Before I talked to you last week, would have been much more nervous just in our defensive line. I think I have a little bit more confidence based on the observations that you've seen. So I am a little bit more confident there. My concern about this specific game is, you know, just those first game jitters, like execution perspective. You need to be able to execute. So for me, I'm still going to pick the Gophers to win. I do think it's going to be probably closer than people want. I don't know. I would hope,
unless Tanner Morgan comes out and he is just extremely inaccurate.
Yeah.
And the defense is looking like a Rob Smith defense. I just don't know how, you know, by the end of the third quarter, this isn't a double digit point lead at some point. I just think that Minnesota's got too much talent for it not to be.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that, you know, with the weapons they have at running back and what the Gophers expect to have in terms of confidence in their offensive line, I think it'll be closer just by the standpoint of they may not put up, you know, explosive plays, but they'll be efficient. They'll control the ball and they won't give up a ton of points. So I'll take the Gophers at, I'll take the Gophers at 35. You know what? I'm going to go 31, 14.
All right. I mean, that's fair. I just really don't know that Jabor Gibbs is going to be able to get it going on night one of his collegiate career. And maybe he is, maybe he's not. But I think if you're a betting man for getting your feet wet as an FCS quarterback on the road at a Big Ten school, it's probably not going to bode well for you.
All right. I'm going to start with Fresno State. This is a game. So we're both 1-1. Sorry. Or 1-0.
We're both 1-0, yeah.
Fresno State. Here's the thing about Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, teams don't have a ton of success going in to Fresno. This is typically, in one respect, like, yes, Tedford's a good coach. He's turned the program around. Historically, they haven't been awesome. But have you looked up the weather in Fresno in early September, late August?
I think it's in the 90s, isn't it?
It's brutal.
It's not great.
And Big Ten teams historically do not do well going west, right? So these are the main things that are concerning for me. I recognize that they've lost a number of players, including their quarterback and a linebacker, right? I didn't write down names like you. You're really good at, like, documenting names. I did some reading.
I can get into that here in a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, I do think that the Gophers are going to pull out a win. I just think it's going to be really close. You know, it might be a late field goal of a kicker. We don't even know who's going to be taking the kick.
Could be a true freshman long snapper in Brady Weeks to Jacob Herbers to Michael Lance as a true freshman to win it.
Right. So
it could be a little bit dicey.
I will take a 24-21 victory for the Gophers.
Okay. I think the the biggest thing I need folks to understand here, if you really don't remember much about Fresno State, is this is a very dangerous game for Minnesota. Because you think Fresno State, and you're like, well, I don't know a whole lot about them. I know they played Minnesota tough last year, but Minnesota won. Well, all Jeff Tedford has done in his 2 years there, essentially, has won 22 games in the last 2 years. He took over a team that was 1-11, and he brought them to a double-digit win season the next year. And then I believe Fresno finished in the top 25. I believe so. They were 11 or 12 game winner last year.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're considered to be among the favorites with Boise State. Now, this is a much different Bulldog team than what you remember coming into TCF Bank Stadium last year, because as our, if you haven't already, go to Gopher Illustrated and check out our off-season fan previews from a man named RRG. He is so good at getting into the nitty-gritty. It makes my job extremely easy. And he noted that Fresno only returns 34% of their production on offense, and that ranks bottom three among all FBS teams. And then on defense, they only return 41% of what they had last year, which is bottom 10. So there is a tremendous amount of turnover going on at this Fresno State team, because you mentioned it, Marcus McMarion, their quarterback, he's no longer there. Keyshawn Johnson, who was their big receiver last year, ended the year with 95 catches, 1,340 yards. He's now in the NFL. And so his 95 receptions are more than everything else combined coming back. I mean, his 95 receptions, okay, Luke, are you with me? They have 82 catches returning. That's it. So you're breaking in a brand-new quarterback. You're breaking in a brand-new set of pass catchers. And they're also losing four starters along their offensive line, who also combined to make, who combined to start 51 games last year. Oh, also, by the way, their offensive coordinator left to go to Indiana. On defense, they lost Mike Bell and Jeffrey Allison, who was a safety and a linebacker to the NFL. They also lost Tank Kelly, who graduated, had 18 passes defended. But even still, I mean, this is a very dangerous place to go into. And the other nice thing about it, if you're Minnesota here, is that Fresno State does not open up with a cupcake. In week one, do you know who Fresno State's playing, Luke?
I don't actually know who they're playing. I didn't look that hard.
They are playing USC on the road. And I can promise you, Fresno State is going to be pulling out all the stops. They're going to be trying to make sure that they can go into the Rose Bowl again and beat UCLA just like they did last year. And so USC, UCLA, everybody knows there. And we're going to be able to see, you know, what this Gopher team is about, because not only is it a difficult road game, it's going to be very hot. It's a 9:30 p.m. Central Standard Time start. And that's just not something that Minnesota's used to. You're going from an 8 p.m. start in Central Standard Time. So I guess if there's any consolation, Minnesota's going to be able to just go an hour back. Or an hour and a half in when they play Fresno. But this is just going to be a very interesting game, because it's going to be hot. You're in an unfamiliar environment. You're in California, your first road game. How does this team respond? And so all that being said, I have a lot of respect for Fresno. I also think that they're not going to be able to hold anything back against USC. So Kirk Schrock and Joe Rossi are going to get a great scout in terms of what this 2019 team is about. And I think Minnesota's offense is too much in the second half, and the Gophers escape California unscathed. Now, I don't think it's going to be by a lot, and I believe Fresno State is maybe even going to be a favorite in this game. But I have the Gophers winning 28-20. Again, I'm placing a lot of faith in a Joe Rossi defense that they're going to be able to slow down whatever Fresno's offense looks against. But I think that this Minnesota offense in the second half, the way that they're built with Mo Ibrahim, with Rodney Smith, and this offensive line, they're going to be able to do some damage.
All right, Ryan, I think it's the only fair, since I got the first crack at Fresno State, that I give you the first crack at Georgia Southern. Here's the thing about Georgia Southern, though. They're a triple option team, which we saw last year against Georgia Tech. But number two, they have some just wild stories about them here in the offseason.
It's been an interesting offseason, unfortunately, for their quarterback, Shai Wirtz, who – we talked about it, I think, a couple episodes ago about the bird poop cocaine story down there. And then it turns out was actually legitimately bird poop. So that young man had his name drugged through the rug for no reason.
Yeah, which I actually talked to my wife about how. So for those that don't know, my wife's a criminal defense attorney. PM me if you need any criminal defense Just FYI.
Sick plug, Luke.
Thanks. She says that those devices are absolute hot garbage. Like she doesn't even know why they give them out.
I will say this. I said this 2 weeks ago, and I'll say it again. How are we sending our law enforcement out with those, in the words of a criminal defense attorney, hot garbage in terms of cocaine or bird poop, and it tests positive for cocaine twice? But regardless, Shea Wirtz is now back. He's practicing. He is the engine that makes that option offense go for Georgia Southern. And by the way, this is also a good time to tell you that Georgia Southern is the third team in the non-conference here that won double-digit games last year. And Shea Wirtz was a big part of that. He accounted for almost 1,900 yards of offense, 25 touchdowns. But that being said, we're talking about a team that does lose 1,600 yards and 14 scores from the running back position from last year. I mean, if you have any idea about the option, you saw it against Georgia Tech, a version of that. But in 2018, the Eagles attempted fewer passes than every other FCF, FBS team aside from Army. So you know what they're going to want to do in this game. They're going to want to run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. And that's exactly what Georgia Tech tried to do. And they didn't have any success. And then Minnesota took a double-digit point lead. I mean, the best thing Minnesota could do in this game, Luke, to really put it away early, go up 10 or 14 points. Have it be 14-0, 17-3, 10-3. Because when you have an option offense like that, what do they want to do, Luke?
They want to protect the ball, and they want to
take the air out of it, right? With like a 16-play, 82-yard scoring drive that takes up 13 minutes, to where if they're winning, that's great. If they're in a negative game script, of which there's a pretty good chance they're going to be in, then they're going to have to try to pass the ball, and that's where maybe the option quarterback, of which this is the same school, by the way, that produced Jerick McKinnon. For those Viking fans out there that remember the Jerick McKinnon days. So you can kind of see what kind of athletes they have at quarterback, because that's the exact same position Jerick played at Georgia Southern. So I think it's going to be interesting, because on the defensive side of the ball for Georgia Southern, they run a 3-4, which will be the first time that the Gophers have gone against that style of defense since the Wisconsin game. And so it's going to be an early test, I would say, for Kirk Shiraka and company. Tyler Johnson's also going to be going up against a pretty good defensive back by the name of Kendall Victor. But regardless, I don't think you're going to see a lot of scoring in this game, not because Minnesota's offense isn't capable of it, but because if Georgia Southern is having any kind of success in this game, they're going to be having 7, 8, 9, 10 play, or they're going to be having like 14, 15, 16 play drives that take up 9, 10, 11 minutes on the clock. Whereas if Minnesota can get up early, that's really going to throw a wrench into Georgia Southern. So I'm going to have Minnesota winning this game 31-17 to finish the non-conference 3-0. Luke, what say you?
You know, it's hard not to get optimistic about the Gophers' defense against the triple option, just how successful they were. But in the same respect, you kind of have to take that Georgia Tech game with a grain of salt, because if, at least to me, it was obvious that Georgia Tech just didn't care, right?
Like, well, and I mean, you can say that, but on the other side of things, I would argue that they did, because it was Paul Johnson's final game. You want to send your coach out with a bang, but then Minnesota just took the will out of you.
Yeah,
they were just more physical, but
yeah, I mean, the point I guess I'm trying to make is like at the instant that they were down early, right? Because the Gophers got up quick, that was the end. Like they didn't have any interest in fighting back. To me, they just kind of gave up. But that said, you make a great point that it is challenging for a team like Georgia Southern or like Georgia Tech to play from behind. That's not what they do traditionally very well. So that's a position you need to find yourself in. And that's probably going to be my key to this game just in general. I think that this non-conference slate is actually sneaky tough, because, you know, like you said, these are three teams that all had double-digit wins last year. I know a lot of them are losing a lot, but they all have, you know, good reputations. Tedford's a really good coach. SDSU has been a really consistent program for the last couple of years and seems to be, I think they're ranked number fourth in the latest FCF's poll that I saw. this is just a sneaky, tough non-conference schedule in general. It's one where it's like, if you win, you're not going to probably get any recognition for it, right? But if you lose, you're still going to take a lot of heat for any of the losses to any of these games.
Sure.
But here, I'm kind of surmising the non-conference with my Georgia Southern justification. But I will take the Gophers to win here. I will take them 28-14.
Well, that puts us both 3-0 going into a bye week that will see me be going up to Borderview Lodge on Lake of the Woods to
Gopher commits that weekend.
Yeah. Can't wait to be on the phone with, or may or may not be on the phone with, Gopher staff members while they're on the road and they're like, "Hey, I'm at a high school game. Where are you at?" "Oh, you know, standing out on the porch on the Rainy River, you know, looking out at Bedette, Minnesota." So that puts us both 3-0 going into the bye week to what I think is going to be a very interesting early season test for Minnesota as they go on the road to West Lafayette and Purdue, Luke.
Yeah, so Purdue has probably the most dynamic player that I can think of in Rondell Moore, right? He was actually the feature photo in your GI season.
I wonder
preview.
Why, Luke. Yeah, I wonder why.
He's super legit. He had a breakout freshman season. You have to respect just what they were able to accomplish with him. I know David Blau is gone, but correct me if I'm wrong. When I was doing some research, the guy who's going to start this year was supposed to be the starter, but got injured last year.
Yes. The short answer to that is yes. But that being said, we're talking about a guy who really didn't play much last year. Because if you remember, Purdue was supposed to rotate quarterbacks.
Right.
But they weren't able to.
Yes, correct. So, at the end of the day, this could be a shootout, right? Last year, the Gophers were able to win quite handily at home. I think it was a little bit of a surprise to everybody. I don't know how much the weather played into that game. If you remember, it actually snowed there. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, this is a road game. The Gophers will have already played one road game at Fresno State, but their first Big Ten road game. Purdue will come in wanting to avenge the loss. Rumor has it on the last podcast, Jeff Brom, not a big fan of PJ Fleck. So I'm interested to see how that plays out. But in the same respect, I don't know. I'm scared of road games in the Big Ten. I am going to take Purdue to win this one. I'm going to take them 27-24.
I like how you say a shootout and then you only put the over under at 51 points, but
well, that's fair.
That's okay. That's okay. Luke.
That's fair.
I mean, we can come back to it. I will say, I would assume that you've read this stat that again, I found from our friend RRG in his offseason fan preview, but do you know when the last time was that Purdue had 1,000-yard back?
Oh, no clue. I didn't pay that much attention to your article.
Wow, don't flatter me too much, Luke.
I'm just kidding. No, I read it.
2008 by something called Corey Sheets.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a real name. So it's been over a decade, and this is going to be a Purdue attack that once again, you know, they were a top 30 offense last year that they were still one of the worst running offenses. And so teams know what they're going to do, and that's what they've been doing since essentially the dawn of time, and that's passing the ball. And that's where it gets interesting because you mentioned David Blau is no longer there. They lose both their starting running backs and DJ Knox and Markell Jones, of which combined for 1,400 rushing yards, 13 rushing touchdowns last season. And I think the bigger point here from the people that I've talked with that have actually been to Purdue practices that aren't affiliated with 24/7 is they're very worried about the offensive line for Purdue. They lost three starters. And so that's where it's going to have to be. If they can't pass protect, they're really going to have to force the ball to Rondale Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being said, I also know that from some people that have been at those practices that there's a kid by the name of Milton Wright. He's a 4-star true freshman wide receiver from the Louisville area, essentially kind of the same area where Rondale was from. And he has been blowing the top off of defenses in practice, which is only going to help Rondale Moore because think of this Milton Wright as the Rashad Bateman to Tyler Johnson's Rondale Moore in the short to intermediate game. And we also have to remember this is still a Jeff Brom offense. This is still a much different team at home. And this is a team that's going to want to really come out and avenge what they put on tape last year at TCF Bank Stadium. Now, the nice thing, you know, if you're Minnesota here, is the Purdue's going to be tested in the non-conference. They have to go on the road to Nevada, which Reno is a team that won 8 games a year ago and is one of the favorites out there. And then they also have home games against an SEC team and a Big 12 team by the names of Vanderbilt and TCU. So this is a team that's going to be well-tested. This is another team that early in the season, you're always a little bit leery that maybe if they play a cupcake beforehand, they're not really showing us their true hand, and then they're going to get an extra 7, 10, 14 points on that because we don't know what to prepare for. Well, everything's going to be on tape. And Purdue is going to be a team that Minnesota should be able to scout. Now, you also remember the last time these two teams met in West Lafayette. Do you remember what happened, Luke?
I remember that they ran away with it towards the end. There was also a weather delay.
It was the weather delay game. And it was also where Connor Rota was trying to lead the team to a comeback, and it got pick-sixed.
Oh, that's right.
So in 2019, I don't think you're going to see Purdue roll over like they did when that cold weather hit at TCF. But I also think that Minnesota's offensive and defensive lines are also going to be put to the test here. And if they can win in the trenches, where, again, that seems to be the biggest thing for Purdue's offense that's going to hold them back, is if they can't protect the quarterback, I mean, you're going to be having a guy that is going to be coming off games against Vanderbilt and TCU. Last I heard, TCU's got some pretty good athletes in their front seven. So how well is he going to be ready to, or how well does that offensive line hold up? So I think Minnesota actually goes into Purdue and they win. I don't think it's going to be pretty. It doesn't have to be pretty. We're talking about Big Ten football. Both teams are going to be coming off a bye. I think Minnesota given 2 weeks to prepare on how to try to stop Rondale Moore, whether that's with Chris Williamson, whether that's with Antoine Winfield. I'm going to be very curious to see, because we all know that Purdue's not going to be able to run the ball. They don't even try to dedicate themselves to running the ball. So I think this is going to be a shootout. I have Minnesota winning 31-30. Maybe it's a last second extra point from, or a last second field goal from Michael Lance or Brock Walker to win it. But I think this is going to be a tightly contested game, but one that if Minnesota has the aspirations of getting to a meaningful November, they have to win. And I think this sets up well. If Joe Rossi's creativity and practice that we've seen on passing downs, if they can confuse that offensive line and not allow the quarterback to be able to get the ball to their very potent playmakers, that's going to put, you know, flip the game on its head.
All right. So we have now diverged. I have the Gophers at 3-1. You have them at 4-0. This is going into an Illinois game, which is very much a revenge game, I think, for this Golden Gopher defense in particular.
So you're telling me we're only, you know, a half hour into the podcast and you're taking a nice long stroll down Narrative Street with the revenge game narrative. I like it.
I'm taking revenge game. I mean, what could be more embarrassing than basically like Olay's all the way up and down the field for that running back whose name is currently escaping me, but I will look up.
I mean, it doesn't matter at this point. His name was Reggie Corbin, but
yes,
I mean, this is what got Rob Smith fired. And so
for sure.
Minnesota gets after Purdue. They come in. Their first home game in early October is against an Illinois team that's not projected to be very good this year. They're going to be starting a Michigan transfer at quarterback by the name of Brandon Peters. And I'm sure many of you guys remember that there are many members of this Gopher coaching staff that want revenge. Luke, I mean, you wanted to take the stroll down Narrative Street. I'm holding your hand, and we're skipping down it.
I didn't know that the staff, you know, wants revenge on this game. I thought that I would hope that the players want some revenge.
Notice, I mean, if you're a member of Gopher Illustrated, we've talked about this kind of jokingly and seriously at length that Illinois and Minnesota are in a lot more recruiting battles in the last couple of years than they were in many previous years. Well, you know, some words have been exchanged via social media. They've been exchanged via some text messages between the staffs. I mean, there's not a lot of love lost between these two teams. And you look at last year's pathetic performance, that end of the Rob Smith era, 55 points, like 400 plus rushing yards. I just don't think that this is a game that you can lose. Whereas Illinois is going to want to obviously try to come and win it. But if I don't think Illinois is going to make a bowl game. And if they do, I mean, that has to be considered a win for the Fighting Lovey Smiths. So offensive coordinator Rod Smith is going to be breaking in Brandon Peters. Reggie Corbin is back, and I think he's one of the best running backs that nobody talks about in the country, let alone the Big Ten. I mean, this is a very explosive guy. You saw it last year. But brand new quarterback and the pass catching options are very unproven. So if Illinois gets down, how are they going to be able to move the ball? And then you'll remember, Illinois' defense was just terrible last year. I mean, they were brutal. Now, again, there's so much change and turnover in college football that can't put a ton of stock into it, maybe potentially. But, I mean, this was a Gopher offense that wasn't really good or efficient last year, and they still put up 31 points and 430 yards of total offense. Now, unfortunately for the Fighting Illini, they lost what I think is their best defensive lineman, Bobby Rountree, to a medical situation that I think he may be even still in the hospital. And so prayers up for that young man, but they have nothing proven on their defensive line. Their leading tackler is gone at linebacker, and they're still trying to find consistency on defense. To me, I mean, you get Illinois at home here, Luke, and I think this is Minnesota's going to come out. I mean, they should be feeling themselves after winning at Purdue. They can't get too high and mighty, though. So Illinois will be coming off a bye. They'll be ready. But this is a game you have to win if you're going to be contending in the Big Ten West. I think Minnesota's offense is too much, and I think Minnesota wins at home 34-20.
Yeah, coming off a loss for the Gophers at Purdue with my prediction, I think that this is – I wouldn't call it a must-win, but it's like you have to get back on track, right? It's
about as much of a must-win as you can have if you're Minnesota. You can't beat Purdue and then come home and lose to a bad Illinois team.
Right.
Especially if you're going to be contending in the Big Ten West.
You definitely can't. So to me, what this is going to come down to, I think the Gophers are going to find an identity and just run the crap out of the ball to start the game, and that'll work into play action. They'll score a ton of points. The defense will be obviously hyper-motivated given the revenge game that we've already dubbed this. Right. And I'll take the Gophers 42-14.
Jeez.
Yeah, I really think they're just going to stick it to them.
Well, you're taking the revenge game narrative and you're running with it, you're sprinting with it, you're racing Usain Bolt with it, but good for you.
And I think that some people are just jealous of Lovie Smith's beard. That thing is majestic.
It is, but I don't know how much more time he's got left there in Illinois, because if this team doesn't get to a bowl game, I think it's year three or four there. I mean, it's going to be getting hot, in my opinion. So I got the team 5-0. You got them 4-1 going into what I think is probably the biggest game of the season so far when Nebraska comes to town next week, Luke.
Yeah, you know, Nebraska, a team that is going to be playing in the college football playoff this year, will be rolling into TCF Bank Stadium.
Win 8 games the last 2 years combined, and they're going to the – gotta love national media trying to get Nebraska back to the glory days, of which – maybe Scott Frost does get them there, but my God, it's not going to be this season, folks.
But, like, seriously, Scott Frost, he fixes everything. Like,
well, he walks on water, don't you know?
Yeah, he does. This is a game I think that the Gophers definitely have a chance to win. It's at home. Maybe I'm wrong, and I've given Nebraska fans a serious...
there is no fan base that is more defensive in the Big Ten, by the way, than Nebraska.
Yeah,
if you talk anything about Scott Frost, their savior and lord, or if you talk anything bad about Adrian Martinez or that team, it's wild, Luke. It's wild.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Objectivity for that fan base who thinks they're going to be playing for the college football playoff isn't great. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, this is still a very good offense. They still have Adrian Martinez, who I think by the time he leaves Nebraska is going to be seriously competing for a Heisman potentially. They still have J.D. Spielman. They still have quite a bit coming back on offense. But this is still a defense that was absolutely brutal last year.
Correct. And, you know, as Martinez goes, I think the Huskers go. As much as he runs, you got to wonder, you know, if he's going to be able to stay healthy throughout an entire season. I'm not projecting that he'll get injured, but that's just something to keep in mind. When I look at Nebraska, I'm with you. I think that the defense is got to be a serious question mark. Maybe they recruited athletes. I haven't kept that close of tabs on what they've been able to do. I do think this is going to be a close game, but I think at the end, you know, the home field advantage is going to be the difference for the Gophers. Then again, you know, Big Red Nation, they travel pretty well, so maybe they'll sell out our stadium. I don't know.
I think it'll be packed regardless. I think Nebraska will travel well. They always have up to Minneapolis here, but I mean, this is also, I mean, if you're going to talk about a revenge game narrative for Minnesota against Illinois, well, isn't this a revenge game where Adrian Martinez accounted for 400 yards, three different running backs ended the game with over 100 rushing yards, and Nebraska literally got Rob Smith actually fired when they put up 53 points.
Yeah.
Minnesota and Nebraska, they could be both rolling. I mean, this is an, you mentioned that as the Husker offense goes, Adrian Martinez goes. Right. Now, I will mention as well, Adrian Martinez was not healthy for 12 games last year.
Mm-hmm.
He I don't believe even going back to his high school career, he's been able to play a full season. And that quarterback cupboard at Nebraska is pretty thin still. It's very unproven. There isn't another Adrian Martinez waiting behind him. You still have J.D. Spielman. You still have Wandale Robinson, who is going to be an issue in that offense there very quickly. And then on defense, they just lack consistency. And so this is where I think the schedule really helps Minnesota, because the two previous weeks they have Purdue and Illinois. You know, Purdue, I think, is going to be a pretty decent team. Illinois, I don't think, is going to be great. But the Fighting Scott Frost, their two games prior to Minnesota, have home games against Ohio State and Northwestern. So you have the Big Ten East champion coming into town, and then you have the Big Ten West champion coming into town. So where are they going to be at? I mean, emotionally and physically. Physically, I mean, those are two very very physical teams. Ohio State's the most athletic team in the Big Ten to me. Northwestern, you know what they're going to do, but can you stop it? And this is a team that's won 15 of their last 18 Big Ten games. And so where are they going to be at physically? And then emotionally, I mean, are they going to be coming off tough losses in both of those? And can they be able to get up for now a road game in October? I have no idea whether it's going to be 60 degrees, 40 degrees, or 32 degrees. I mean, how are they going to be able to prepare to come in? But I think Minnesota wins it. You know, I say that where I don't think that Joe Rossi is going to be able to slow them down a ton just because the running quarterback has really given Minnesota fits. They still have J.D. Spielman, Wandale Moore, and Wandale Robinson, excuse me, not Rondale Moore. They still have Adrian Martinez. But I also think Minnesota's offense going against this Husker defense, Minnesota gets them at home. I think Minnesota's going to want to make a statement. I have Minnesota winning this game 38-35, and the traveling Red go home a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, I think that for the folks that are traveling from the great state of Nebraska to the beautiful urban area of the Twin Cities, I think they will head home disappointed. Here's the thing. This is a big game for the Gophers. I know that I have them losing that Purdue game, but this is, you know, you have to protect home field advantage when you have the opportunity in games that are going to be close. If you look at the Power Football Index, it has Minnesota is only a 60.5% chance of winning this game. Not a terribly high percentage, but this is the kind of game that you need to win if you're going to be making a big statement, if you're going to be making some noise, as you said, in November. I have the Gophers winning. I do think that it will be an offensive shootout as well. I have the game at 35-31.
All right, Luke, that gets us into what is a potential letdown spot for Minnesota the next week.
Yeah, so this is going to be a road game at Rutgers. I'm going to be honest. I was really looking forward to what was going to be the battle of IMG quarterbacks. Zach Anixed being hurt obviously isn't going to make that happen. And for all I know, the IMG quarterback, I can't forget his name, that is Anixed
beat out. Arthur Sitowski.
And he was the one that was going to go to Miami, correct?
And then Anixed beat him out. Miami dropped him. And then, if you remember, do you remember who the Rutgers offensive coordinator was that then took him?
Jerry Kill. Oh, yeah.
Jerry Kill. Yeah.
And if anybody has, like, opinions on Jerry Kill's quarterback evals, you can submit those.
Jim Zabrowski online.
Oh, yeah. Jeez Louise, that wasn't great. Okay, so, you know, a highlight that is not going to happen because Anixed's injured. You know, a great storyline might be that Anixed could return.
He's not going to be back.
I wish,
when I wrote my preview, I was like, what are we turning back the clock to 2017 at IMG Academy with Arthur Sikowski at Rutgers, Zach Anixed? Well, obviously Zach Anixed's likely out for the season. So I guess my little stroll down narrative street isn't going well there. I mean, this is a Rutgers team that's going to be bad. And you come off potential big wins against Illinois, Purdue, Nebraska. Now you have to go on the road to New Jersey, on the road to a team that's not projected to be very good. And I think the biggest thing you really need to take away from Rutgers' offense last year was that their running back, Raheem Blackshear, was also their leading receiver. Anytime your running back is your leading receiver, that tells me that you are Donovan McNabb as a Minnesota Viking, you are Sam Bradford as a Minnesota Viking, meaning that you're captain checkdown. Anytime you're captain checkdown and you can't move the ball vertically, that's not a good thing. And we're talking about an Archer Sikowski who I think he had like 4 touchdowns and 13 interceptions last year. And I will also say Rutgers' best offensive lineman from last year transferred to Ohio State. They have 3 starters to be replaced on their offensive line, and defense was really bad. Now, my big disclaimer here is this should be a double-digit point win for Minnesota. But I will remind you that if you go back and you look at Rutgers' 2018 box scores, they played Wisconsin and Northwestern very tough at home, where both teams emerged with, I believe, single-digit point victories. So this should be on paper a double-digit point win. But I know that Chris Ash is going to have this team playing well at home. Now, playing well at home may be, you know, a 30th percentile of what they could be playing. But if Minnesota, as they should win this game, and that would have me having Minnesota starting 7-0, which I would be elated if they did to actually cover a good Gopher football team. I mean, this would be the first time that Minnesota has started 7-0 since when, Luke?
That would be Tim Brewster's 2nd or 3rd year.
That would be inaccurate. This would be the first time they started 7-0 since the national championship season of 1960.
Were they 6-0 in Brewster's?
Yes.
Oh, 6-0 then. Come on.
So this is a bad Rutgers team. They should win this game. There isn't a lot of hope there for this Rutgers team, but this is a Rutgers team that played really well at home. Now, really well at home was single/double-digit point losses to Northwestern and Wisconsin, but considering that they got their brains beaten elsewhere, this is a game that Minnesota's really got to take seriously.
So when you look at this game, or when you look at the, not this game, but the schedule in general, the Gophers have the best winning percentage according to the Power Football, ESPN's Power Football Index, against Illinois at 85.3%. The second one is against Maryland at 84.1%. And the third, this is in just Big Ten play is what I'm talking about, for the record, not the entire season. And the third is on the road at Rutgers. I think this is a game that the Gophers should win, and it may not be handily, but I think that they probably will never be a doubt in this game, is my hope. So I'll give the Gophers a 35-21 victory.
I mean, I hope it's that big. I'm a little leery of this being a letdown spot. So
it's fair.
You have them 6-1. I got them 7-0 going into what seems to be the Achilles heel for this PJ Fleck led squad, Maryland at home.
Yes. But Maryland is breaking in a new coach. They lost their coach, probably rightfully so. After the whole, I can't remember the individual that he passed away, but rightfully so, he was let go. I guess from my perspective, I didn't follow that story terribly closely, but whenever you have an issue where a player dies, you have to kind of question, you know, the process and procedures.
I would hope so.
In the environment. So good on Maryland. I mean, I'll even add to, people may be frustrated with the University of Minnesota's EOAA office. I personally, I'm not. I think that how they've handled those situations, I would much prefer that they err on the side of caution. As to our neighbors to the east, where they, I guess, are not going to respect the the EOAA office's decision, and they've decided to overturn that. I just find it very convenient that
Into the Quintus Cephas stuff, because no, did you post on GI like I told you about?
No, I didn't post. It's very convenient. Like, it was convenient for Minnesota during theirs, and it's convenient for Wisconsin now. Here's the thing that looks bad, in my opinion. you're not gonna say anything. This is the press release you're gonna put out. Okay, new information came to light. Thanks to Title IX, we can't say anything about it. But don't worry, just trust us. It's okay.
Can you imagine if that tried to fly at Minnesota?
Well, here's the thing. I get that, you know, maybe he, whatever. That to me just seems like, I don't care who you are, if you're a Wisconsin fan, you're not. That just seems ultra sketchy. That's like, by the way, just trust us. This is fine. A high-profile athlete is going to get a pass. Like, I don't know. That just seems super sketchy. I'm sorry. I totally tangented, but that is so sketchy.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. So, new head coach in Mike Locksley, a new quarterback in Virginia Tech transfer Josh Jackson. I think if you were to go back and look at the track record of first-year head coaches in the Big Ten, it would historically tell you that Maryland shouldn't be very good this year. Just record-wise, first-year head coaches in, say, this last decade haven't had a lot of success. But they do have talent.
Yeah.
I mean, is this the year that Minnesota finally stops Maryland's rushing attack? Because in 17, they ran for 262 yards in a victory at TCF Bank Stadium. In 18, they ran for 300-plus rushing yards and 42 points. And, oh, by the way, of those 42 points, zero of those scores came from inside the red zone. Now, Zach Anix had also struggled to take care of the ball in that game. Rob Smith was completely inept in trying to stop a motion offense in terms of a rushing attack. And Minnesota also played, I think this is worth talking about as well, that 2018 game last year, they played the game 3 days after former offensive lineman Nick Conley passed away.
Right.
And so you're thinking, where are some of these young guys' heads at? They just lost a teammate who was battling cancer and unfortunately is no longer with us. So before I give my prediction, Luke, what do you think?
So I do have this as a win. I think that finally Antoine Winfield is going to walk away from this game unscathed.
That's also a big storyline because Winfield has suffered season-ending injuries the last 2 years against Maryland.
Right.
Non-contact injuries, too.
Right, exactly. I agree with you, though, that, you know, Maryland is a talented squad. I don't think this is a traditional, like, new hire situation. You know, people said that when PJ came in, the cupboard wasn't bare. I'm not entirely sure that was entirely the case. I think Maryland is a situation.
That's a discussion for a whole another podcast. Yeah.
But this is a situation where, like, literally, the cupboard literally isn't bare. There are a lot of really good players at Maryland. I will take Minnesota, though. I'll take it in a close one. I'll take 28-24 Minnesota.
I'm going to predict a loss. Ooh, I know, shocker. Ryan doesn't think that the team's going to go into November undefeated. No, I think it's absolutely within the realm of possibilities, and I think that's what your big takeaway should be. I think that Minnesota is going to have one loss going into November. Now, whether you want to say that's Maryland, whether you want to say that's Purdue, whether you think they slip up against Fresno State, whoever you think that they're slipping up against, Nebraska, Maryland, Fresno State, and Purdue are my big choices there. I think that they slip up against someone. And I just don't know that this is the year that Minnesota can finally figure out Maryland's rushing attack. Now, this is going to be a much different team with some of the same pieces, but they still have Anthony McFarland, and they have three other capable options in their backfield. Josh Jackson is also very capable with his arm and his legs. Maryland's also going to be transitioning to a 3-4 this year. So we talk about consistency. I have stressed this on every single GGR podcast, is if this team can be consistent from week to week, the sky is the limit, and the sky being a potential date in Indianapolis. And so I think this is a week that Minnesota slips up. I think this is a week that kind of brings them back into a reality check, heading into a bye, where Minnesota can get some extra motivation coming into a big game against Penn State in 2 weeks. But I have Minnesota losing this game 28-27, and Minnesota goes into their bye week 7-1. So, Luke, we both have them 7-1 going into the second bye.
We do both have them 7-1 going into the second bye. The Gophers are going to welcome Penn State to TCF Bank Stadium. If I remember correctly, the last time the Gophers hosted Penn State was a win during the Jerry Kill era. Is that correct?
I think that was when Christian Hackenberg, everybody's second round the next savior in the NFL, the second round bust that Christian Hackenberg was, came in. And was Allen Robinson on the team? He might have been.
He might have been.
And Minnesota was able to play them tough, and mm-hmm. this will be the first time that they returned since then. And so they'll also be a trophy game, Luke.
Right, right. The trophy that I believe the Gophers broke the last time they won it at TCF Bank Stadium, which I always thought was super funny. This is actually the first game that ESPN's Power Football Index has the Gophers as not a favorite in the projected outcome from a percentage perspective. They have a 39.8% chance of winning this game, according to ESPN. Penn State, while good, I don't think that they are completely – I don't think that they're completely the power that they maybe have been the past couple years. Maybe not quite the talent. But what I will say is James Franklin absolutely got his job saved by the Gophers. In that loss at what was that?
Saquon Barkley. It was when Kunle Ayinde couldn't tackle Saquon Barkley. All he had to do, he was right there.
But not only that.
That was the Kunle Ayinde game.
Let's not forget too. The quarterback scrambled like multiple occasions in that.
It's almost like Trace McSorley is really good, and Minnesota couldn't figure out how to play man spy, and then Kunle Ayinde was having issues tackling.
Right.
It wasn't great. And so this is the first time that Minnesota's played them since. Trace McSorley, I mentioned him. He's now gone. He's in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Miles Sanders, their very talented running back. He's now gone. He's in the NFL with the Eagles. So they're going to be having some younger guys come in. They're going to be having some guys like Sean Clifford and Ricky Slade, two guys that are very highly thought of in the star rating industry. They're going to be the quarterback and the running back. They also have some pretty good guys on defense by the name of Luke, I don't want to hear it when I misenunciate.
Do you want me to try first?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeter Gross Matos?
I believe it's Yeter Gross Matos and then Micah Parsons. I can do that one.
Yeah, that one's easy.
So wherever there were holes, there's former blue chips fighting for him. Now, I think the biggest thing to note here is both Minnesota and Penn State are going to be coming off byes, mm-hmm. but Minnesota's final three games before their bye, we talked about them, Rutgers, Maryland, and Nebraska. Okay. For Penn State, they're on the road at Iowa, they're home against Michigan, and they're on the road at Michigan State. Now, that's about as tough as it goes in Big Ten play. Two road games, and then your lone home game there is against the Michigan team. So I'll ask again, where are they going to be at mentally and physically coming off the bye? Of which it's going to be in November in Minnesota, it's going to be cold. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't get cold out in Happy Valley, but Minnesota has played very well in the cold in recent memory. So, but, you know, it's very plausible that both Minnesota and Penn State are projected are in the top 25 in this game, but I have Minnesota losing. I think it's a very good game. I think Penn State pulls it out in the end, 24-21. I will also say for the Penn State staff, this also might be a little bit of a revenge game for Mr. Matt Limegrover, who is Minnesota's former offensive coordinator, and Jerry Kill, who's now the offensive line coach for the Nittany Lions.
Yeah, that is going to be a revenge game for him. Absolutely. I like that storyline. I think, though, that we should try to keep track of how many Diet Cokes we see when they pan to him in the press box. Like, I don't know. That's what I'm going to be looking for.
We'll see.
I don't know about you guys. This game, that game in Happy Valley still haunts me. That's a game the Gophers absolutely should have won. It would have been really big for that season. I don't know why I'm stuck on that, because it's a totally different year, totally different team. No more Trace McSorley.
Spin it out.
I'm gonna take Penn State too. I'm going to take them 23-17.
All right. So we're both 7-2 mm-hmm. going into Kinnick Stadium the next week.
I think the Gophers have not fared well in Kinnick. I think you mentioned on our last podcast, it's been since like 99.
You are correct. Yes. It has been 20 years this year since Minnesota has gone into Kinnick Stadium and won. And Iowa has also won 6 of the last 7 games against Minnesota.
Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about Kirk Ferentz and the law of Ferentz, as I call it.
Let's hear the gospel.
So the law of Ferentz is that when there are expectations for Iowa, they're not very good.
Yeah, it seems to be that way.
And when there are no expectations for Iowa, they are really good. So, Ryan, tell me, are there expectations for this Iowa team?
I mean,
team
they're in the top
year?
25.
They are in the top 25.
Which would tell me this is a 7-win season for Kirk Ferentz, wouldn't it?
It would seem that way, but in the same token, they are now without Noah Fant and TJ Hockenson, both of which were first-round picks. Kudos to Iowa there.
Yep.
They're going to have to replace that. That's a big portion of their offense that they're going to have to try and replace. So how are they going to try and replace that? This is where I think expectations might actually be low for them this year.
See, my biggest thing with this game is it's going to be cold. It's going to be November.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be in Kinnick Stadium, and that's where I'm a little bit leery about Iowa's offensive and defensive line, and I think rightfully so, because that's where Iowa has sufficiently – I mean, kicked Minnesota's tail the last 2 years is on their offensive defensive lines. Mm-hmm. I think Minnesota's offensive line is going to be formidable. Now, that's where it's going to be. What can Joe Rossi do with two projected top 60 picks at tackle for Iowa and Tristan Wirfs and Alaric Jackson? How can they try to get after Menominee's own Nate Stanley? And how does Iowa prove that they can move the ball through the air without Noah Fant and TJ Hockenson? And that's where I'm a little bit leery. I mean, Minnesota's still going to have to try to go against A.J. Epenza, who's going to be a top 15 overall pick at defensive end. How does Sam Schluter and Daniel Faalele hold up against that? And it's also November in the Big Ten. I just don't think that this is the year that it happens. I think Minnesota falls, and by my calculations, I got Minnesota on a 3-game losing streak now. So throw all the shade at me you want, but I think Minnesota loses a tight one in Kinnick. They lose 20-17, so I have Minnesota 7-3 heading into Northwestern.
All right, I'm actually gonna take the Gophers to win this one.
You homer.
I know the law of Ferentz for me this year says that they shouldn't be there shouldn't be expectations for them, and therefore they should be good. But there's every season's got to have a letdown, right? And I think that this is the game for the Gophers. You know, streaks are meant to be broken, you know. Just don't be afraid to be a legend.
Look at Wisconsin
is what I
last
heard.
Year.
Yeah, don't be afraid to be a legend.
All right, so you're 8-2, I'm 7-3 going into what is going to be a disgusting game in Evanston.
Okay, I wanna take you back to when you and I first started podcasting. You were putting together, it was the summer, you were putting together your preview for GI. Well, it wasn't GI at the time, it was Gopher Digest.
Oh yeah, good times.
And so we're chatting back and forth, and you're giving me your predictions, and I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm a real, real big Pat Fitzgerald guy.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I think you're in the Pat Fitzgerald
sick,
boat, like
sick pat boat. On the back, Lute. Sick pat on the back.
I'm gonna find that. I'm gonna screenshot that message.
Oh yeah. Put it up on your mantle every night before you go to bed. You see,
I'm
not any better. I was humble bragging about my predictions last year, but yeah, I mean, Pat Fitzgerald, all he's done the last 2 years, he's won 15 of his last 18 Big Ten games.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's sustainable. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, it's totally fair. I just don't have the Gophers winning this game because I have the utmost respect for Pat Fitzgerald. I know my humble brag just a minute ago, probably is irritating some people, but I have mad respect for him. Like you said, these are traditionally ugly games, and you know what? It's still okay to win ugly, and I'll take Northwestern at, I'll give them a 20-17 win over the Gophers.
So here's what I'll say about Northwestern this year is Clayton Thorson's gone, and
yeah, dude, 5-star quarterback coming back.
They're replacing him with Trevor Lawrence's backup, which is a former 5-star by the name of Hunter Johnson. Well, you look at their pre-November schedule, they're on the road at Stanford, they have Michigan State at home, they're on the road in Camp Randall, on the road at Nebraska, and then they get Ohio State and Iowa at home. I mean, that's about as brutal of a September-October as it gets. Now, Things get easier in November for them with games against Indiana, Purdue, and UMass the week before they play Minnesota. That, I mean, that's a gauntlet. I mean, it's an absolute gauntlet nonetheless. And here's my thing about this game is it's going to be disgusting. It's going to be late November in Evanston, Illinois, which means there's going to be about 4,000 people at Ryan Field. There's going to be a 25-mile-an-hour wind coming out of the northwest off the lake of that is called Michigan. It's going to be sneeting. I mean, it's going to be cold. Sneeting. And so who won? I mean, it's not, you ever seen sneet?
Yeah, I've seen sneet. I just think that's funny.
It's so much fun to be in a tree stand while it's sneeting out, and it's just pelting you.
You're so weird.
I enjoy it too much, I know. So it's going to be cold. It's going to be disgusting. No one's going to be there. And this is where it comes down to for Minnesota. In my reality here where I'm predicting this, you're in a three-game losing streak. Now you go into a stadium where no one's going to be. It's going to be cold. It's going to be disgusting. You need to look yourself in the face and say, this is a game I need to win. Because if I want to go to Indianapolis in 3 weeks and play in a dome stadium and play against Ohio State or Michigan, I need to win this game. And that's where I think Minnesota does it. I think that they're able to move the ball in that second half. And I think they're able to win on a late field goal for whether it is Brock Walker or Michael Lance. So I have this game as a 17-14 win for Minnesota. They end their three-game losing streak, 8-3 heading into the Axe game. And I believe you also have them at 8-3 going into the Axe, right?
Let's see. I had losses to – I didn't write all this down, so I'm doing this on the fly. I had losses to Purdue. I had a loss to Penn State.
And I think you had them losing to Northwestern. So you're 8-3.
Yeah, I'm 8-3 as well. Yep.
All right, so we're 8-3 going into potentially the biggest game Minnesota's played in 5 years since – that 2014 game at Camp Randall where the winner got to go to, and if you remember that game, David Cobb had like two early scores to put Minnesota up 17-13 or 17-3.
Yes.
Like midway through the second quarter. And I remember I'm rubbing my temples right now. I'd had a cardinal sin, Luke. I started to look into flights to Indy. I was like, this is it.
That is here a cardinal sin.
And then Wisconsin comes back and beats Minnesota because Mitch Leidner throws some key second quarter interceptions that instead of points, it's a turnover and points the other way. I digress. So actually that game was in 2015. So it's only been 4 years, but it feels like forever. So this is going to be a very interesting game, Luke.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Gophers absolutely manhandled Wisconsin in Madison. I recognize that Wisconsin was down on their defensive line, but you know what? Excuses, they don't they really matter. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody has
to put the explicit tag on this podcast because if we're going to be honest, they got their ass kicked.
Yeah,
and I don't want to hear about it because that's the reality.
I mean, it happened, so it happened.
It happened.
I think Wisconsin is going to be much better this year. They, from what I can hear, is they're much better on both the defense, or well, especially on the defensive line this year from a health perspective. I think it's going to be a much closer game. I'm waffling here whether or not the Gophers are going to win. Let me hear what you got.
Let me give you the facts. So this isn't the same team that Minnesota saw last year. Obviously, it's college football. There's always turnover. Alex Hornibrook is now at Florida State. The highly touted freshman, Graham Mertz, doesn't look like he's going to be getting the starting nod. It's going to be Jack Cohn. The Badgers also have to replace four starting offensive linemen, including three All-Americans. And I'm well aware this is Wisconsin, but I mean, they can't continue to turn out NFL product after NFL product, right? Right.
You would think.
So regardless, four new starters on the offensive line, they'll be broken in by then. On defense, top three linebackers are gone, still question marks in the secondary. And they still have this guy called Jonathan Taylor who is going to be pretty dang good. Now, this is where the schedule comes into play. Whereas Minnesota had Maryland, Rutgers, and Penn State, what does Wisconsin have for the first time in history that they actually get a difficult schedule? Well, let's go through that schedule now, shall we? This Wisconsin schedule, they have Michigan, Northwestern, Michigan State, and Iowa at home. But they also get Ohio State and Nebraska on the road. So for those counting along at home, they get Michigan and Michigan State in their crossover games. I know all you Gopher fans are just playing the world's biggest pity party on the world's smallest violin for this Badger team and these Badger fans. But this is a team that I'm just so curious to see how they stand up. Because, that's about as difficult as it gets. You get Michigan, Michigan State. Then you also have Northwestern and Iowa and Nebraska, just like the rest of the Big Ten West does. But I just think that so much is on the line. I think this game is going to be packed. And if it's not, for the scenarios that Luke and I have outlined, we both have them at 8-3. There is a very plausible and a very realistic point to where if Minnesota wins this game, they're going to Indianapolis if this is the case. Because I think 9 wins in the Big Ten West this year gets you to Indy. Now it's going to come over to the crossover games in terms of the division with Iowa and Nebraska and Wisconsin among them. So if you win and you're in here, this place has got to be rocking. Mm-hmm. And I think Minnesota gets the axe back in terms of leaving it in Dinky Town, and they win 31-21. So I have them at 9-3 ending the season. What say you?
I went into this and I said, I'm going to find a way to get us to 8-4.
You're already at 8.
I'm at 8.
How far do you want to keep going? You're already this far. You might as well keep
on going.
The
homer in me wants to have both the Florida Rosedale and the Axe residing in Dinky Town over this beautiful winter that we affectionately all love.
How sweet would that be?
That would be pretty sweet. I don't know. I'm going to take Wisconsin. I don't like to do it, but I'm going to take them just to get to 8-4 because that's what I said I had to get to.
You're such a...
I know. But let's be honest. And now as we close this out...
I mean, 8 wins either way. Whether you listen to Luke or I think the Vegas line's 7.5. So
yeah.
If you put some money down in Vegas, you're welcome. This actually plays out.
I'll say this. This all means absolutely nothing now that we finished this because so much is going to change. I know that you do this for a living, but really we know nothing when it comes to predicting these games week to week.
I don't care how they get to the 9. I mean, you can pick your poison. I just think that from what I've seen in fall camp, the offense is going to be too good to not have this team performing well. I mean, there's just too many pieces. If Tanner Morgan stays healthy, skill position wise, the Batemans, the Tyler Johnsons, the Brevin Spanfords, Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks, Mo Ibrahim. And if the defense can just allow 20 to 23 points a game, the offense is more than capable of 24, 28, 31 on any given week. And that's where I don't care what the 3 losses are.
Right.
I care to an extent, sure. But you have to be able to win 8-9 games this year with the schedule that you have.
Yeah.
I mean, that would put you in the Outback Bowl, or that would put you in the Music City Bowl. I mean, I would enjoy going to Tampa or Nashville in late December instead of going to Detroit for Christmas. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the question that I have for you is, you know, this offseason we talked about if the Gophers are going to improve and they're going to make a meaningful jump, right? They've kind of hit that first plateau of make a bowl game, right? And then they won a bowl game. The next plateau is make that next tier bowl game. You're saying they get to 9 wins. They had to be more consistent. So you're telling me that you believe they're going to be more consistent this year.
I do. I mean, from what I've seen and from what I've heard about other teams in the Big Ten West, it's so wide open to where you played all these freshmen last year for a reason. And that was to get them ready for 2019 and 2020. So you have a lot of, I think the stat is Minnesota's among the top 5 teams in the country in terms of returning production. So you have a lot of guys that have played Big Ten football now. Things shouldn't be wide-eyed for you after the first series or two after you get your feet back underneath you. This should be a team that's competitive in every single game on this schedule. You mentioned the ESPN FPI. Minnesota's favorite in 10 games, and in the other two that they're not, there's a coin flips chance that they win that game. There is not a single game I look at on the schedule where it's not like they're on the road at Columbus or on the road in Ann Arbor, where it's like, it's probably not going to go well for you. And this is a team that's built, number one, that if they get ahead early, they're going to be able to run the ball, and they're going to force teams to really try to move it through the air against them. And that's where I really want to see if Joe Rossi continues this creativity. And I, you know, I keep talking about the creativity, and some folks may, what am I talking about, where Joe Rossi has been very creative in passing downs, where he's been switching up the personnel, getting his best athletes onto the field in that front five, front six, front seven to get after the passer. So it's not just four down linemen. I know who they're going to block. I mean, you could, in theory, wink, wink, have one down lineman. And then by one down lineman, only one guy with his hand on the ground, and there's five or six other guys standing at the line of scrimmage. I mean, that should terrify you. Do I have to – am I going to block Kamal Martin, Tay Devers, Carter Coughlin, mm-hmm. Boye Mafe, Thomas Rush? Who am I going to block? Because right. if you choose wrong, that quarterback's going to be over in a quick minute here. So I just think that they're able to find consistency this year. I think in year three with Kirk Shiraka's offense, with a quarterback who played in it, and then a defense that, frankly, is inexperienced in spots, but I think they can overcome those. And that's where I think you can get to 8-9 wins this year.
All right, so the question for me now is, this isn't the year, though, that PJ is working towards, right? Like, the year he's working towards is 2020, I would assume.
And if they're a year ahead of schedule, you know, in theory, no one's going to complain, obviously. Right. Especially if they're able to somehow coerce a trip to Indianapolis, or even if they get to 9 wins and they don't get to Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 9-win season, and you're likely going to the Citrus or Outback Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Or even Music City Bowl. I mean, either one of those teams, you're going to be playing against an SEC team in a warm weather destination.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would, if 8-9 wins, what we predicted actually comes to fruition, that is an absolute success for Minnesota.
Okay, so
now,
then,
if like Tanner Morgan gets hurt and we have to start a true freshman, then expectations change.
Right.
And then 7 wins, maybe, it should be considered a success or just a bowl game because – again, I think everything is situationally dependent, but in this scenario where Tanner Morgan starts and plays in 13 games, this should be a very good season for this Golden Gopher squad.
Okay, this is just how I want to close this this episode out. PJ Fleck has found a way to arguably bring in a couple of the best recruiting classes in the internet era, right?
For Minnesota standards.
Minnesota, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, that's the disclaimer I left out. What does 8 or 9 wins do for recruiting for him?
It would get you into more living rooms. Now, there's going to be a quote-unquote lag effect to that, to where, say, Minnesota wins 9 games. They're not going to, in theory, get into a ton more living rooms in this year's class
right.
because they're already sitting at 24 commits right now. And, I mean, maybe you can bump one or two out, but that's not kind of the way that PJ rolls with that kind of stuff. So that would set you up for the 2021 class, which already has a 4-star quarterback in Ethan Calliope-Manis. I mean, does that momentum, you go to guys like Riley Malman, you go to guys like Justice Sullivan, the two big in-state recruits for Minnesota, the top two, and they're 4 stars already. Does that kind of show them that, hey, come be a part of something. You don't have to go elsewhere in the Big Ten to stay home. Does that convince a guy like Kane Johnson that, hey, there's progress? You know, and we could get into the Caden Johnson topics that we've been discussing in Gopher Illustrated in length in terms of where things are at there. But that gets you in to set up your 2021 recruiting class that you already have 3 commits in to really bolster that and really have that become your best recruiting class in terms of per star average. Now, I don't think they're going to get to 25 in that one like they're in this one. You can't sign 25, 25, 25 and then have a 4th straight class of 25. In theory, this one's going to be smaller in the teens somewhere. But then you can get into more living rooms. You can get guys interested and up on summer official visits, get them to the summer splash to where if you can get some 4 stars up here in Georgia, from Florida, from Texas, and show them that Minnesota isn't the barren wasteland like SEC schools really tout that Minnesota is year round. I mean, that makes a difference. And then that's so where if Minnesota has the season that we talk about, that's where it's not necessarily going to reflect in the 2020 recruiting class. But I can assure you that Minnesota will come out guns a-blazing in 2021. And if that's the case, Gopher Illustrated would be a fantastic or elite place to be to kind of follow that recruiting progress.
All right. So I want to thank everybody for listening to this episode. Again, if you're going to be attending the Gopher game against South Dakota State, go check out the Goal Line Club tailgate. Opener 5, O-P-E-N-E-R, and the number 5 at your checkout will get you $5 off that tailgate. That is one. The news that we broke tonight that Tony's Diner is going to be catering is reason enough to join, right?
It's life-changing news.
It's life-changing.
It's life-changing.
Yeah, absolutely. So check that out. Again, want to thank you for listening, and go Gophers.